You have limits physically, you have limits with your energy, you have limits with the season of life that you're in, and actually embrace those as a gift from God.
You're listening to the 95 Podcast from the team at 95 Network, where we host conversations specifically designed to support leaders in small and mid-sized churches. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the 95 Podcast. My name is Carolee Culpepper, and I'm here with our Executive Director, Dale Sellers. How's it going today, Dale?
It's going wonderful. It's going wonderful. I understand you have your kids behind you today or in the house or above you somewhere.
Yes. So typically we record these in the morning when everybody's at school, but here at our time right now, it's 2:30. So everybody's coming in from school, going out to gymnastics. And so,
if we hear some gymnastics going on, we just know it's a normal thing in the normal life of your.
There will likely be some noise going on in this household. I will just say that. So.
I love it. One of our core values at 95 is families first. And so we love it. You know, I actually was on a Zoom call with a pastor today in Memphis, Tennessee. And Bellevue Baptist Church has a play area where all these kids come and it's got like this great maze. And so he'd taken his kids and got them Chick-fil-A. And then they were sitting by him and he's doing his Zoom call in a play area, which in itself was like, it was really bizarre. And he had a kid on each side of him, and they wanted to get through eating so they could go play. And so finally, the oldest kid wanted to go play, and he said, "Did you eat your ice cream?" And she said, "No, I don't want it." And I'm going, "Oh my goodness, that must be a heck of a play area for a kid to turn down ice cream." You know,
really, I can't see either one of my kids turning down ice cream.
Well, he made her eat a little bit of it, but then the real truth was he wanted it, so it worked out good. So anyway, but we also today, our guest is a huge family man himself, and I hope that by the time we finish our conversation today, he's going to help a lot of other families. Today we have back with us, who he's been on before, my friend Lance Witt, and Lance is going to talk to us about his new book today. But first, let's just kind of catch up with him a little bit. Lance, how you doing, bro?
I am doing great. I just came off of a 90-day sabbatical that was amazing, but the party is definitely over. I'm back to work. So
you got to talk a little bit. What does a guy do on a 90-day sabbatical?
he doesn't work, and he removes all obligation from his life and spends time resting, recreating, building memories with his family, just enjoying life. And I did a lot of that. We had some fun trips. My wife and I went to Alaska. Mm. I did a five-day personal retreat in Montana. Mm. I went to the Ryder Cup golf tournament with my buddy.
Oh, cool.
My husband would be
Connie
so
and I
jealous.
Got some time at the beach. I read about 35 books. So it was.
Did you read Stalled?
What? Did I read what?
Did you read Stalled yet?
Yes.
Good. I was hoping it made the cut. Well, dude, you started your sabbatical after I finished mine, and I haven't really talked to you about it, but mine didn't go so well. So anyway, I'm glad you had a good one. So as we kind of dive in today, take a few minutes and tell everybody who Lance Witt is. If they want to know the real backstory, they can listen to our first podcast because we spent more time on that. But I want to allow as much time as I can to talk about the new book. But give us a little bit of your stories before we get into to what we're doing today.
Yeah. So on the personal side, my wife and I, Connie, celebrated 43 years of marriage this year. And it honestly feels kind of surreal to even say that out loud.
It does, doesn't it?
Mm. And I've now been in ministry 45 years.
Wow.
Two grown kids who are both married. And the best thing about my kids is that they produce grandkids.
Yes.
And so we have four beautiful granddaughters, two that are 9, two that are 7. All four of them live within a mile and a half of us. So we feel like we're getting a dream right now.
That's great.
But on the ministry side, I started as a senior pastor at the age of 23. And then I pastored.
Those two words don't go together.
I think, what was that church thinking?
Senior pastor.
And then 20 years as a lead pastor. Then in 1999, joined the staff at Saddleback Church with Rick Warren and became one of the teaching pastors. But the main thing was became the executive pastor over all the ministries of the church. And I was there during when Rick wrote Purpose Driven Life. And that was such a game changer for him.
What was the name of that book?
What's that?
What was the name of that book?
Yeah, it's called Purpose Driven Life. Oh, you ought to pick up a copy.
I'll see if I can find it.
But it is really a huge part of my story because it was both the most intoxicating season of my life and toxic all at the same time.
Oh, really?
Just an incredible ride of ministry influence, but also a lot of challenges. And a lot of those challenges were that I honestly wasn't leading myself well. I was a workaholic. Pace of my life was out of control. A lot of pressure in that season. Stress at home. And to make a very long story shorter, after 7 years, kind of made the decision that I had to have a change. And Rick and I had 4 pretty lengthy conversations. I finally concluded I needed to step away. I didn't have another place to go, didn't have a church, didn't have a job. And out of that season of confusion and dysfunction, God called me to, I remember I was on a plane ride to Singapore. It's middle of the night. Everybody's asleep on the plane. And I'm just saying, God, what do you want me to do? Because here I am, 46, confused, lost, wondering what I'm supposed to do when I grow up. And I just said, what do you want me to do? And I've had very few mystical experiences in my life, but God met me so clearly and said to me so clearly, I want you to help leaders be healthy, holy, and humble. And that was the start of Replenish that I've been doing for the last 15 years. And kind of the mantra of my ministry is we want to help people live well so that they can lead well. And I think the order of that's really important. Like focus on how I'm living and then out of the overflow of a great life, do great ministry. And so for 15 years, I've been trying to come alongside leaders, pastors, church teams, nonprofit leaders, and just help them stay in love with Jesus, have healthy rhythms, have great marriages, enjoy their life, and do ministry from that good place. So hopefully that gives you a little snapshot.
Well, I know Replenish so impacted my life. And I told you before that I was actually serving as an executive pastor at a church at the time. And I took our entire staff through your book, one chapter, because it's little short chapters, one chapter at a time. And it was very impactful in our lives. And so I really appreciate you doing that. In the midst, before we dive into the book, and you've been on sabbatical, so this may not be as current for you. What are you sensing or seeing that's happening in the church right now? We're not post-pandemic, but at least maybe on this part of it, what are you sensing and seeing?
I'd say number one is I just feel like every church I'm at, every leader I'm with, they are in a season of rebuilding. At some level or another, they are rebuilding. I think also I'm just seeing it's maybe more complex to be a pastor right now than certainly any time in my lifetime. Pastors are more criticized, scrutinized, and just can't seem to say it right, you know, and everybody's going to take issue with something that you say. And so I think, you know, pastors are swimming in that. And there's been a lot, as you know, a lot of discouragement among pastors, a lot of pastors who I think if they had another option for making a living, they would walk away tomorrow. And
I'm seeing a lot of them do that, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think, you know, that's created some real challenges for pastors. I think also the other thing, this is a bit of an indictment on us in the church, but I think COVID accelerated and exposed the immaturity within the church. That a lot of our people do not think biblically. They think politically. And so it's created some real challenges. But at the same time, Dale, I would say this is a great season to be in ministry because when the world is screwed up, it's a great opportunity for the church. And, you know, against the backdrop of confusion and brokenness, that's when the gospel shines the brightest. So Amen. It's not a time for us to be discouraged. It's a time for us to bring our A game.
I love it.
Yep. That's so similar to what Paul Alexander was saying in one of our recent podcasts, you know, that when controversy happens is when Jesus can work the most. So,
And you know, the Bible is pretty clear about this. That, you know, when God goes to straighten things out, He always starts with the church, then the world. But to start with the church, you got to start with the leaders.
Yes.
You know, 100%. We teach one, you know, in 95 Network, people who know us know that our first focus always is health before growth. Because if you're, you know, we say it all the time, if you're a church of 50 and you're unhealthy, we don't want you to be a church of 200 because it's just a bigger mess. And so, yeah, you know, an unhealthy leader always creates an unhealthy ministry. So you've written, this will be your, is this your third book, the one we're going to focus on today? So you wrote Replenished. Then you followed that up with another book, right?
Yeah, High Impact Teams that is focused on both health and high performance.
Okay.
So I part of that was coming out of Replenish, I'm like you, I'm concerned about the health of a leader, health of a team. And I always feel like health is the tip of the spear.
It is.
But I also wanted to come alongside and go, but at the end of the day, we also have a mission and an assignment, and we want to be as effective and productive as we possibly can. So what does a high-performing team look like also? And that the real synergy is when we actually are able to do both.
Yeah.
And so that's the premise of that book.
So I want everyone to know I highly recommend both of those books, as well as the new book that's just come out. So take some take a little bit of time and kind of set up your new book. I believe it's called Your One Life. Dive into this a little bit for us.
So I feel like, you know, Replenish was really written for pastors and church leaders. And very early on in my own journey of kind of trying to be a healthy leader. And I had some early convictions, but I don't know that I had a lot of how-to in Replenish. And then High Impact Teams obviously is focused on team environments, team culture, and how to be healthy and high performing. But then this book is really written to any Christ follower. And I would say the basic thrust of the book is, how do you really steward well the one and only life that you've been given? And I remember as I kind of sat down to think about this, I thought, I've been on the planet 6 decades. And so if I could sit down with my grandkids and talk about what are the most important things that are going to help you live the life you really long to live, the life that God has for you, the life that is aligned with your passions and your unique wiring, what would that life look like? And so I just kind of sat down to try to write out different themes of what I would want to communicate about what it looks like to live an amazing life in this world. And so that's kind of the essence of it.
I love that. I was just telling Dale earlier how excited I am to talk to you today.
She's really fired up about it. So
I am.
Go ahead and tell
them why. I mean, for me personally, I think this is just something that's really challenging my life to kind of balance being a mother, having a career, making time for family, extracurricular things, and to do that stuff well, but to also, you know, take care of myself, you know, along the way to be as effective as possible. So I'm very excited to hear what you have to say today.
Well, and I think, you know, kind of one of the places where I start is this whole issue of just kind of the urgency of you get one shot at this life. Like there are no do-overs, no mulligans. You don't get a second go round. Like, we get one stab at this. Now, I don't think that needs to stress us out, because 2 Peter 1 says, everything I need for life and godliness, God has already given me. So I have all the resources, and I have the creator of life who's given me an instruction manual. One of the things I talk about is I think it's actually helpful for people to face their mortality. I am not going to be here forever. And I need to be clear about what really matters to me. And one of the quotes I use in the book comes from a guy, John Cotter, who says, most people don't lead their lives. They just accept their lives. And I think that's really significant, because I think it's very easy to just sort of click off the days and sort of get in the flow of culture without really stopping to ask, like, hey, am I living for the stuff that really matters? Am I on mission for the purposes of God? Am I leading my family well and myself well? And so the first part of the book is really a call to kind of like take seriously leading your own life.
So what if you're already You're already a mess. And the reason I say I intentionally have not talked to you a lot about what happened after the sabbatical situation with me, but as I sat down with my counselor in Texas, he looked at me and he said, Dale, he said, your biggest problem is you always ignore yourself. You take care of everyone else first. And he said, you know, when you're on a plane, what do they always tell you? Put your mask on first. And he said, and I don't remember how Bob exactly worded this, but he basically said, you're not going to get a lot more wake-up calls to figure this out. And that was like, oh, man. You know, because I had two questions that I wanted answered when I sat down with him. The first one is, it wasn't a question. I'm like, I want to live a long life. I want to be here for my kids. I want to be here for my grandkids, you know, the whole deal. And I want to do my grandkids' weddings and stuff. And it was like, you know, it was not comforting to me to recognize I don't get to make that call. Got all my days were numbered before they were ever, you know, written in the book, you know, that kind of thing. But the second thing I had asked, and I want to use this as a lead into you, to where you what you're dealing with, is I when I was going through the difficulty that happened on the sabbatical, I'm like, where was Jesus? And he was always there, you know. So talk to us a little bit about, you know, about the fact that even though he's right there with us, we can miss him or ignore him by getting all kerbobbled is the word I'd like to use.
Yeah. And I think we live in a culture where there's just a lot of frantic activity, frenetic lifestyle. We're open for business 24/7. We're always connected. And so I think sometimes it's not that we intentionally walk away from Jesus. It's just that the noise of everyday life tends to just keep us distracted. And then we end up feeling disconnected. And then when we walk into a crisis, then we're like really lost, like, wow, what happened? And I lost my bearings. And that's why I'm such a big advocate for times of reflection and slowing down. And times to evaluate, like really at the end of the day, what does matter to me? And what kind of, you know, if I play the movie forward with the way I'm living now, what does the final scene look like? And I think that there are a lot of people that they're catapulting toward a final scene that has a lot of regret, you know? Regret about, I wish I'd taken better care of myself physically. Like one of the books I read on sabbatical was this book called Younger Next Year. And it's really targeted toward people who are approaching like 50s or 60s. And one of the things the guy says is that you should, as you get to be 60, you should think of your health as your new part-time job. Because he said 70% of the problems that debilitate old people are completely preventable.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
And so it just makes you go like, yeah, I got to be intentional. I'm not going to just drift into a healthy body or drift into with my spouse.
I thought I could do that because I turn 60 next year.
Oh, yeah. Man. Well, you know, yeah, just keep just accidentally hope you're going to get there. That's going to work out really well. It's really done well for me, I got to tell you.
I'm thinking about, as you're talking, I'm thinking about, okay, so Kara Lee's got two kids. I think they're 3 and 6. And she's starting to talk about how busy her life is. Talk to her. Tell her how she can do this.
Well, I think one of the things I would say to Kara Lee is, one, you got to be a student of your own life and your own soul first. Like you know, and I think this is where a lot of people don't spend time like really understanding who they are, what's their unique wiring, what are even their unique limitations, what's the narrative you're constantly telling yourself. And so I think to anybody, but I think to younger families, I would say you got to become a student of your own soul and you've got to grow in self-awareness. And one of the quotes, I wish this was original with me, it's not, but I use this a lot. It goes, self-awareness is your best defense against self-deceit. So the more I grow in my self-awareness, and by the way, I think self-awareness becomes a major lid for a lot of leaders. They're insecure, they're defensive, they're prideful, and they don't have self-awareness. They're not getting good, honest feedback from people who will tell them the truth. And so I would say, become a student of your inner life, really understand even not just how you're wired, but even some of the broken places in you. Like, so I've had this narrative that has kind of been my script my entire life. And I really picked it up from my dad, who's a great man. But the script I learned was work hard, be responsible, achieve. And mm-hmm. that's how you succeed. And by the way, that's how you get loved. Well, when that's the story you're constantly telling yourself, you're only as good as your latest achievement, right?
Right.
The other thing, Carol Lee, if you and I could sit down and have coffee, I would say to you is you have to embrace your limits as a gift from God. Like you are in a season that has limits because you have children at home and young children at home.
Right. And that is tough for me. That is a super tough thing for me because I want to say yes to all the things and do all the things.
And when you're a leader and when you're a go-getter and when you want to make a difference with your life, it's really easy to sort of live like, hey, I'm just going to always try to push up against my limits. And I know as a pastor, I often tried to live as though the idea of limits didn't really apply to me because I'm a pastor.
Yeah. Boy, do I see that.
And I should have, you know, unlimited energy and I should say yes to everything. And I had what I would call a faulty theology of availability. And that was whenever anybody asked me, I had to always say yes. And so I think to understand like your limits, you have limits physically, you have limits with your energy, you have limits with the season of life that you're in, and to actually embrace those as a gift from God and not try to live beyond those limits. And part of understanding limits is really embracing space and margin and a healthy rhythm of life. I did not do that well.
This is where I get very confused sometimes, really, and just in my personal life is like, is this a self-imposed limit or is this, you know, an actual real limit that God is saying, like, this is your limit? Yeah. I think sometimes I kind of question, I'm like, well, you know, is this something that I'm just scared to do? You know what I mean? Or I feel like I don't have the time or the energy or anything like that to do. The water is murky there for me sometimes.
Yeah. And I think that's very fair. There's not a easy formula for this stuff. And there's no simple equation that helps you know, you know, because there are some limits that obviously God wants us to stretch and grow beyond and break through a limit, right? But then I think to me, there are more just limits that are just realities of my life that I do need to not try to push up against them. And I think part of it is when I do constantly try to bump up against that limit, does it drain me? Does it empty me of life? Does it make me stressed and frustrating? Those are probably not limits I need to try to break through.
We'll be back to the episode soon, I promise. But I have a quick question. What if you could get thousands of dollars of resources and material for just $95? Wouldn't that be a pretty great deal? Well, that's exactly what 95 Network membership is. We have courses, bonus videos, a community of pastors, webinars, coaching groups, discounts, and so much more within membership. There's a lot of great things happening there, and I want to encourage you to jump in and check it out. Find all the details at 95network.org/membership or find the link in the show notes. Now let's get back to today's episode.
When I do constantly try to bump up against that limit, does it drain me? Does it empty me of life? Does it make me stressed and frustrating? Those are probably not limits I need to try to break through.
Okay. This is like a therapy session for me. This is great. I need to hear this.
Well, I wanted you guys to talk about this because you represent so much of a generation of our listeners that are living this way. And, you know, one of the things that happened to me, Lance, as you know, was I was at a place where, you know, it wasn't a matter of me not knowing that what I was doing, but I was just so full of shame. You know, one of those things I always tell at our pastors' conferences, I was just with a group of pastors the day before yesterday in Indiana, and I always share this. I was at a place in my life where I wasn't pleased with what I was producing because I felt like I'd let God down. So if you and me had grown up together, and let's say we both started ministry at the same time, and you took a church of 50 and I took a church of 50, and your church grew to 200, but mine was still at 50 or 60, if I saw you in a restaurant, even if we'd been the best friends in the world, I would have intentionally ducked out to not speak to you, not because of you, but because of me. Yeah. And so that's why I love your new book and what you're focusing on. It's not just the things around us that's destroying us. It's actually what's inside of us. And there's this pressure we're putting on ourselves to be perfect and to be everything, and that Jesus himself's not putting on us, you know? Yeah. So when you dive into the book, you broke it into several sections. Kind of walk us through how it flows.
Yeah, so the first section really is crafting the life you long to live. And so I think that's where you have to start, is facing your mortality. You have to own the fact that I'm responsible for my life. I, you know, yes, I am saved and my life belongs to God, but he has given me the responsibility of leading my own life. And so one of the chapter titles is "Wherever You Go, There You Are." Like, the one person you can't get away from, the one person that if you move to another city, that's always going to go with you, it's you. And so I think you have to really own like self-leadership. And I think this strikes at sort of the victim mentality in our culture. And go, you know, Henry Cloud has this great saying I use a lot, that you are ridiculously in charge of your life. And, you know, for some of us, it'd probably be helpful for us to sort of just stand up, look in the mirror and go, you know what? I have everything I need to live a life of godliness, and I am ridiculously in charge. I am a leader. I tell the story again that we all know of the prodigal son. And you remember that moment when he's in the pig pen and
he came to himself.
He's eating with the pigs, and he actually, what they're eating looks enticing. And then I love it in the King James, there's this little phrase, "and when he came to himself," that is a moment of self-leadership. Like, hey, I don't have to stay on this path. My past doesn't have to define my future. I can choose something different. And so for me, that's kind of like owning and taking responsibility for your life. The second section is all about soul care. And I call your soul the operating system of your life. Like, you know, we all have our phones and the apps and everything on our phones are the programs, but running in the background is an operating system that ties everything together. And when the operating system goes down, everything goes down. And so I talk about, what does it look like to actually pay attention to your soul, to care for your soul? So one of the things I'll often say in Replenish is that self-care is not selfish, it's good stewardship. And, you know, kind of gets to Dale, what you were saying that your counselor said,
right? I thought I was being selfish.
You don't take care of yourself. And self-care is not self-absorption, and it's not selfish. And so that whole section is kind of just on, you know, what does it look like to have a healthy soul? Section three is entitled, "It's About Time." And it's all around hurry, busyness, the discipline of the daily, Sabbath, daily rhythms. And one of the verses that I had the last couple of years has been so like powerful in my life is in 1 Thessalonians, Paul has a verse where he says, make it your ambition. And you would think it would be like, make it your ambition to make a big impact, to make a difference, to be epic, to, you know, go big. And Paul says, make it your ambition to lead a quiet life. And I think about, what if instead of trying to grow the biggest, you know, and always being about more, what if we made it our ambition to give our best energy to living a great daily life? And so that whole section, and I got a lot of conviction and passion around this because it comes out of my own brokenness of being a workaholic, compulsively busy, always in a hurry. All right, let me just give you before the last two sections real quick.
Hold that before you do, because I want there's something I want to dive into there. So how do you do that when it's like everybody around you seems to control your life? And what I mean by that, you were in a mega church, but you were still out of control. A majority of our small church pastors, their church looks at them as a hireling. I mean, it's just a fact. And they look at them as you work for us. And so what do we do when the people that that are around us are part of the problem, I guess is the best way to ask you that question.
Yeah. And I think this is a real journey, and it's been part of my journey. And I'd be lying if I was said that I've got it conquered, because it's still a battle for me. But I'd say, number one, I would say, look to a pastor in the eye or a leader or a mom in the eye and go, hey, you have more control than you think you do. yes, there are certain things about your day and your world that maybe you don't control, but I do control a certain percentage of my time. And I think I have to own being a good leader of that. The second thing I would say is this really is a soul care issue, because I think to live the life that you want to live, you have to get really clear about your priorities, and then you have to order your world around those priorities. And that's going to mean that you're going to disappoint some people.
Oh, that's the hard part. Mm-hmm. Come on. Means, we're pastors, man. We're not supposed to let anybody down.
I know.
I went to one of my board members. I tried to do this, dude. Let's get real transparent. Well, I'm pastoring at my church, and everybody knows how that ended in disaster. But I went to one of my board members one day, and I said, I need to talk to somebody. And I poured out just a few things, and he literally looked at me and said, stop. You can't do this to me. I need your life to be perfect.
Wow. Hmm.
And I'm like, okay, who do I talk to?
Yeah.
And he went into depression. It was like he was going, you know, a lot of our pastors are there. It's like we're not even allowed to be human, you know?
And we all need a safe place where we can talk, and we need, you know, that environment. And I mean, that's sad. I know that story's not just limited to you, Dale.
That's why I shared it.
There's lots of pastors who've had a similar conversation. But I also think, you know, at the end of the day, you still got to go back and go, okay, I'm going to control what I can control. And for me, one of the biggest things is actually learning that no is a complete sentence, like learning to say that word. And as a pastor, it would have served me well to just stand in front of the mirror and practice saying no. And here's the key, I think, to no. Every no, turning something down, saying no, every no needs to be rooted in a higher yes. Mm. And so the higher yes might be, you know what? I'm going to say no to this invitation because I need to be with my kids. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say no to this meeting because we haven't had dinner as a family, you know, one night this week. And so I think you've got to identify what's the higher yes. And then I think it helps you to learn to say no. Mm. But I do think this saying no too, it's a soul care issue in that I have to be secure in who I am and not a people pleaser and not finding my validation from what some deacon or board member or church member thinks of me. And when I'm secure in my identity, I can take more control of my time. But I do think for a lot of pastors, a key to them living the life they want is they got to grab their calendar by the throat and they've got to schedule their priorities. So I'll sometimes use this little equation when I teach: clarity plus courage plus calendar equals effectiveness. You got to get clear about what you value, what you believe. Then you've got to have the courage to actually execute on that, order your life around it. And thirdly, if it doesn't end up on your calendar, if it isn't in your schedule, then it's not going to really get anywhere. And so clarity plus courage plus calendar, I think, can lead us to more effective lives.
We had Carrie Newhoff a few weeks ago, and he's got his new book out. I think it's called At Your Best. And Carrie said something, and there's been a couple of moments in my life where it was such a bell rang on a moment. Carrie says, you know, take your calendar out and look at your calendar. And if 6 months from now your calendar is completely clear, that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
Well, see, that's counter to me. I'm like, oh, I've got it cleared out so I can fill it up with stuff. And he's like, no, you got to put in the date time for your spouse, and you got to put in that time with your kids and make sure and he was talking about, you know, even scheduling your most creative time in the morning or however you're wired. But that was so counter to what I've experienced in my life. And so,
I think to be proactive, to get out ahead of your current commitment. Mm-hmm. So you may not be able to do anything for the rest of the month of, you know, November, but you know, what about like get your calendar out and plan out your January, February, March, get the big rocks on there, the breaks. When is your Sabbath? When are you going to take vacations next year? And then when people ask you to do things that intersect those, you have the complete integrity to say, hey, I'm sorry, I'm already committed.
Yep.
Now you're committed to yourself, but you're still committed.
Yeah. Tell the formula one more time. The courage.
Clarity plus courage plus calendar equals effectiveness.
I love in your book where you're talking about the difference between marking time, the chronos, and the maximizing time, the kairos. And you said the word that comes to mind is clarity.
Yeah.
When you're trying to really maximize your time.
Yeah. Because we've all been given the same chronos time, right? Mm-hmm. Every hour has 60 minutes. Every, minute has 60 seconds. But kairos is the, like, that's actually qualitative. You know, chronos is quantitative. Kairos is like, I'm actually, you know, there's a difference in an hour whether I spend it binging on Netflix or actually engaging in meaningful relationship with my spouse. Mm-hmm. Those are both an hour of time, but the leverage and the meaning of that time gets changed by how I use it.
Mm-mm-mm. Well, it does. I interrupted you going to points, I think, 4 and 5. Yeah. So go ahead and pull back into that now.
So the fourth section of the book is just what I called enjoying life with God. Mm. And I know pastors can relate to this, that it's very easy in ministry to, you know, let your work for God replace your being with God. Mm. And I get to be around a lot of Christians. And when I really probe around on their spiritual life and their walk, they'll start off with, hey, it's fine. It's okay. And I'm spending time in the Word. But when you really dig down and you press them, you begin to hear words like mechanical, routine, stale, dry, you know, not much there. And so I wanted to write a section about, like, what does it look like, even as the years go on, to really have a joy-filled, meaningful connection to Jesus? And so that's kind of what that entire section is about. And I deal with some harder things in there, like the issue of personal holiness, which we don't talk about anymore. Mm-mm. But if you're going to enjoy God's blessing, you're going to have to live a life of purity and deal with sin in your life. And I talk about surrender in there as sort of the means of God's blessing in your life. But I even talk a little bit, I have one chapter on called Surviving Unhappy Endings. Like, what do you do when life hasn't turned out like you thought it would? How do you find God in that place? And mm-hmm. And then the last section is just what I call practicing the presence of people. The value of adding value to somebody, going deeper in friendships. You know, Proverbs talks about the power of life and death is in the tongue. Mm-hmm. And how can I be that person who is a life-giving person? I tell people, like, every day you carry around two invisible buckets. In one bucket is water and in the other bucket is gasoline. And you need to be wise enough to know when to use which bucket. Mm-hmm. Like, when there's contention and stress and anger, you want to pour water on that fire. But when it comes to the idea of potential and what you see in people and believing in them, you want to pour gasoline on that fire, because you want to stoke the fires of what God could do in them, and what you see in somebody that they can't see in themselves. And you don't just call that out, you call it up in their life. And then I kind of finished the book with a couple of chapters on, I think one of them is called Take a Moment to Create a Moment. Mm-hmm. It's the power of being intentional about creating meaningful moments in our life. And then the final one is, like, it's not what will be your legacy, but who will be your legacy.
That's good.
And one of the regrets I have is about not always being an available dad. I had sort of this, I think, misconceived notion about being a pastor and wasn't always there for my kids. But one of the statements in my life manifesto is, I want to be an available grandfather. Mm-hmm. And that is going to be, those four little granddaughters are going to be part of my legacy. So I can write a great book, but what am I doing to invest in my grandkids? So that kind of gives you hopefully a sense of the flow of the book.
It makes me want to go for counseling, go forward an altar call. I mean, I'll just have all kinds of
an offering.
I was sitting here thinking, do I really want to ask this question? But I think I'm going to. You talked about personal holiness, and my observation of doing what I do for 40 years is, it seems to me that most people who really emphasize personal holiness become legalist.
And
that's not healthy either. You know, I mean, I meet these guys all the time, and you're talking about, you know, the spiritual discipline this and the spiritual discipline that, but they're mean as a snake. And so can you kind of speak to the balance of that, if you will? Because it's really about relationship with Jesus, you know?
Yeah, and I grew up in a church and in a time, I think, when there was a lot more legalism, a lot more sort of rules-based Christianity. Mm-hmm. And you're right, that's death. It's mean-spirited. It doesn't evidence the fruit of the Spirit. But here's my fear, Dale. I feel like we've swung the pendulum way to the other side.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And it's now all about freedom and what, you know, that I'm not under law. And so it's almost like, how close can I get to the line? And so it makes me think of Ephesians 4, when Paul talks about in anger and not giving the devil a foothold. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys have seen this documentary about Alex Honnold. He's a mountain climber, and it's called Free Solo. And he climbs El Capitan, this 3,000 foot granite slab that's almost completely vertical, and he climbs it without any safety ropes.
It's intense. That makes me queasy hearing you say it.
No thanks.
Well, you should watch the documentary. I don't think I can get through it. Sometimes the camera will zoom in on his fingers and he's looking for, or his toes, and he's looking for that little piece of rock that just sticks out an eighth of an inch that he can grab hold of, because a foothold becomes leverage to take more ground. And so what I want to say to us is we just have to be careful about the little footholds, careless language, inappropriate joking, watching something that wouldn't be helpful for us, because I think the point is that a foothold can become a stronghold. And I just see leaders, young leaders who are all about freedom. Mm-hmm. I find myself, Dale, asking pastors, like, do we really believe, I mean, really, that what God pours out his Spirit on is holiness, surrender, dependence, prayer, humility? Or do I really believe that what God pours out his Spirit on is a really great strategy and a really great sermon series and a clear vision? And all that matters.
Yep.
But I think when you read scripture, God says, you know what? I want to pour out my blessing on clean vessels. Mm. And one of the statements I make in the book is, I read this article where this guy says the cardinal sins of leadership are that one of them is that we mistake gifting for maturity. Mm. And I think, wow, that is so true of our day. We have spotlighted gifting, and sometimes there isn't maturity. And one of my fears for young pastors is that you would have a level of success that outpaces your maturity.
Yeah, we used to talk all the time when we were when the church that I was pastoring, we talked to our young, because we really focused on young people, and you know, we just say, guys, your gift's not going to be able to keep you where your character doesn't follow.
Yeah,
man, I've seen that happen over and over and over again. You know, and this is another random question: have you watched The Chosen? Have you seen that?
Yeah, I have.
Man, that thing has rocked my world.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, it's not necessarily a biblical concept of things, but just watching how Jesus interacts and relates to the people, it's kind of like, man, wouldn't it be great if he would do that today? And then it's like, well, he wants to.
Yeah, he does want to, and he's just as real, right?
Yep. Well, man, I could talk to you for hours. I'm always replenished when I talk to you, especially when I talk about my one life. How was that? Huh? Just what a segue there.
That was a nice segue. Nice segue.
Well, we appreciate you so much. Thank you for taking the time to hang with us. When you think about it, you know, we have today hundreds of small church leaders, and it's just so cool because I keep meeting them everywhere I go. They go, oh, we listen. I was this past week in Indiana. These guys are going, yeah, I listen to your podcast. You know, so I'm like, wow, that's just so cool.
That's awesome.
But as you think about that, if you had the chance to sit down with these guys one on one and these ladies, and you could just give them a word of encouragement or advice or wisdom with all that you've experienced and where you are today, what would you say?
Well, Dale Carey, I think if I could sit down with a pastor and just have a cup of coffee, I'd say one, just relax. Like you are deeply loved. And I remember, you know, watching that movie, The Shack, and that person that plays a character of God, and as they talk about Mac, the primary character who's struggling, mm-hmm. you know, God says, well, I'm especially fond of him. And mm-hmm. I guess I would like to look at a pastor and go, I know this is like a, maybe a harder time than it's ever been in trying to do ministry, and everybody's rebuilding and it's hard for everybody, but God is especially fond of you and you matter, and lead yourself well, get your own personal rhythms right, put that oxygen on you first, and then lead out of that healthy place. And then I think the last thing I would say is, hey, we all want our churches to grow and, you know, have significance and, you know, be life-giving, and fruitfulness matters. But I would say to that pastor, faithfulness is king, fruitfulness is queen. Mm. Like at the end of the day, what Jesus celebrated most was just faithful. So week after week, year after year, just stay faithful. Keep preaching the gospel, keep loving people, keep shepherding them, keep loving your spouse. You do that right, and whatever growth comes, God will take care of that. But you just be faithful. Mm.
Such great advice.
Thank you.
So before I let you go, there's a pastor listening right now, and he or she is at the end of the rope. Mm. What do they need to do?
Gosh, I'd say go back to what you know. Go back to what you know about Jesus, about ministry, about your why you got into this in the first place. Mm-hmm. Carve out some time to just get alone with God, to just listen. God's not afraid of your doubts and your questions. And I'm sure there's somebody listening who the truth is you'd like to just walk away. And you may end up doing that. I don't know. There are just times when it has to just be us and God. And all you can go back to is your calling and what you're giving your life to. And I would just say, hey, what you're doing in ministry, I don't care how hard it is or how small it is or how big it is, it matters. Mm-hmm. We are representing the purposes and the plan and the heart of God on this planet. What you're doing, it has eternal significance.
The book is Your One Life by Lance Witt. We'll put a link to it in the show notes of how people can get it. I just want to thank you for taking the 40 to 45 years, however long it's been, worth of ups and downs. And if your life was like mine, most of it was downs, it felt like. and pouring it into the others. That's what I want to do the rest of my life. You know, I always tell pastors and younger folks, hey, man, if I can tell you something to help you avoid some of the pitfalls that I experienced, and we're all a product of how we were raised. But thank you for being so honest and so transparent, for putting things in print so that people can read them. And thank you for being available. And so we'll make sure that people know how to connect with you as well. And thank you from our perspective, thank you for being our friend. You know, we thank you for supporting 95 Network by being here with us today. And I'm just looking forward to our relationship growing. I do want to come fishing with you, but probably July. I don't really want to try to trout fish in November in Colorado. But just thank you so much for being available and being who you are and sharing your story. And I pray blessings over you and your wife and your kids and all those grandkids, man. Just thank you for who you are.
Thanks for listening to the 95 Podcast. We look forward to sharing another episode with you next week. In the meantime, visit our website at 95network.org. The website is loaded with great resources created for small and mid-sized church leaders. Until next time, have a great week.